When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You've thought about joining a book club, but there's one problem. You're too busy. Or buying books aren't in your budget. Or some books aren't in the format that you can access. Or you lose interest before you can finish. Or maybe you have no interest in reading the book. Whatever the reason, there is a book club for that. Here at Book Interrupted, reading the book is not a prerequisite for joining the conversation. It's about connecting and celebrating life's interruptions. Join the community by following us on Facebook or contact us through our website at www.bookinterrupted.com/fans. We'd love to hear from you.
Book Interrupted is running another contest. We're giving away a one-year membership to Masterclass. Is there a passion project you've always wanted to pursue? To find out more, go to www.bookinterrupted.com/contests.
Parental guidance is recommended because this episode has mature topics and strong language. Here are some moments you can look forward to during this episode of Book Interrupted.
Have one goddamn second to yourself, you know?
I can't do Zoom calls. I'm just holding on by a thread here. Don't give me sympathy. Don't give me explanations. Mm-hmm. Don't give me solutions. Don't give me any of that.
To the point of pushing them away because we just keep on talking about the same thing.
Trying to be supportive, but I'm just not a good listener. It's just like, when can we put the mic back on me?
Is being expressed and accepted. And you would look at me like,
I'm going to move a couple
of chairs.
Are you
a robot? Right.
My body and soul. The inflammation is the goal.
Disrupted mind, body, and soul. Inspiration is the and we're gonna talk it out on Book Interrupted.
Welcome to Book Interrupted, a book club for busy people to connect and one that celebrates life's interruptions. If you'd like to join along, this book cycle is from June 20th to July 25th. It's Meredith's book pick, and we're reading Nonviolent Communication by Marshall B. Rosenberg. Nonviolent communication illustrates how to use language to strengthen your relationships, build trust, prevent conflict, and heal. All right, so it's personal journal time. Let's see what the members of Book Interrupted thought outside the group.
Hey, so this is my second personal journal for Nonviolent Communication by Marshall B. Rosenberg, and I'm about 3/4 of the way through the book. It's a very easy read so far, or it's easily set up, I guess. It's all in little sections, so each chapter is an idea that they build on. There's little gray boxes which have ideas that highlight within those chapters that you should pay attention to. There's little anecdotes. There's an NVC in action where it says a little story or a way that it worked, it was put into action, the idea. It has a summary at the end. It also has exercises you can do in order to practice what you've learned. So I really like that. It is very easy, but that being said, I'm not really finding an enjoyable read. I am trying to get through it so I can read something I want to. But there have been a few things that I have appreciated. I appreciate not using labels. When we give people labels, we tend to act in a way that contributes to the very behavior that concerns us, which we then view as further confirmation of our diagnosis, which I totally agree with. Honesty being a gift more precious to others than accommodating them to prevent their upset. Clear requests of what to do without vague, abstract, or ambiguous language, very important to me. I really don't like the anger section. I find it, I can totally understand why it would be considered tone policing. I rarely get angry, but when I do, I always feel like I'm entitled to it, which I guess is wrong in this. I also just don't think that I can justify giving somebody empathy or space or time to spout their ideas if they're hatred towards somebody or hatred towards a group of people. I just don't like that. But besides that, there's definitely a few things. I do find it's very common sense. It's using a lot of words to say certain things, but it also feels like it's a lot of work to be able to learn how to do this properly. So I'm just going to finish the book and then I will look back through my notes, see what I think, reassess, and then I'll come back with my final book report and idea.
I think that nonviolent communication is a good thing. I think that the gist of knowing your needs and taking another person's needs into consideration when you are communicating are important guidelines to keep in mind, especially if you're trying to solve a conflict. So that's good. But in terms of like, if I am enjoying reading this book, I'm not. It's just dry. And I'm really conflicted because this content and topic is something that I'm usually really interested in. I am really interested in. So I'm usually quite motivated to read it. But there's something about, I don't know if it's the tone, because there's nothing wrong with the information. Most of the information I totally agree with. I don't know if it's the way other people take the information that maybe I'm misdirecting my discontent back to the book. I should probably look deeper into why I have this issue. Maybe it's about me not liking that some people don't do the very things that nonviolent communication is telling people to do. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. But Personal Journal 2, I agree with the messages, but I don't really like the vehicle in which they are delivered. So there you go. That's the end of that. Thank you. Goodbye.
So far, I really like this book. I love that they have like all the different emotions. I also like the different needs because I was feeling like when I was reading it at one point, because you know, they're saying it's hard to figure out what your needs are and you communicate your needs. And I really liked the needs page because I realized that the thing that causes conflict the most for me is my need for peace. And then that's where I go into the other emotions. You know, that's another thing, the part that they said, like, where do you default to? Do you blame yourself? Do you blame others? Do you identify with your feelings or identify with other people's feelings? But the example he gave was someone saying someone else is selfish. And I was really trying to think what my go-to is. But because the story in it, the example in it had to do with selfish, I realized, and I think this might be something, is that that's a trigger for me because that's the worst thing you ever be, according to my mom. Is selfish. Like I was raised that selfish is the worst you could ever be. When I have that situation, I would immediately go to blaming the other person, identify with my own feelings, and then I would go to identifying with the other person's feelings, and then eventually get to blaming myself for getting so upset over it. But that's like the only scenario when there's some sort of like trigger for me. But when I think in most situations, like most scenarios where I am in a conflict, I would say that I immediately either default to blaming myself or I go to identifying with other people's feelings. And ultimately, the need that I'm always trying to meet is peace. I'd rather not be in a conflict at all costs. So there you go. That's how I identify. Anyway, so far, a good book. I'm enjoying it. I like the little like examples and stories he gives and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm just shy of halfway through the book. It's a short little book, which is always handy. It's really interesting so far. My initial thoughts were kind of, this is a bit of a snooze fest. It was a bit boring, a little technical. But the more we get into it, and especially after discussing it with the rest of the girls in the book club, the more that practical, boring initial reaction is actually kind of helpful because I can really use the tools, I think the word he uses is fundamentals, for putting some of his ideas about communication into good practice, which I need. I'm very assertive. This book helped me to think about how the other half lives, you know, like how people who communicate differently than me feel and how they might be communicating with me in, even though it's a different manner of communication that I personally choose to use. I'm very direct. I'm very to the point. You always get the like honest to goodness, straightforward facts from me. Sometimes my delivery is a little bit harsh. That, of course, is hard on lots of people. And I have trouble understanding why people can't be honest and why they can't be honest on a dime with themselves or with me or direct with me. So that's challenging. And I want to be more thoughtful with my words. I want to be more patient with my emotional kind of go-to-ness. And this book has a lot of really good ideas that putting things down to what needs are not being met really kind of gets down to the core of any kind of uncomfortable conversations or fights you might have with someone. Like, what need is not being met? And what I came away with so far in the book is the need that triggers me into anger, I guess, is loss of power or loss of control. Gives me an anger reaction, but the truth is it's hiding a fear reaction. I guess the need is to feel in control. The need is to feel, it's such a hard thing and such a simple thing at the same time to talk about, you know, what is your need? But I'm going to really pause on that and think about that more and how is that, why is that a need? It's really interesting to me. It's sparking a lot of these thoughts in myself, like why do I do things the way I do them? All in all, I feel really good about the book. What at first I was just kind of like not into it. Now feels very practical in the best possible way, very usable. So that's it so far, and I'll see you on my book report.
Hello again, friends. It's Kara coming back with some more on this incredible book. But anyways, let's just jump right in to how much I freaking love this book. Holy cow. I really am a firm believer that we are emotional beings who think, and we are not thinking beings who feel. And I feel like Marshall gets it. He knows. He understands this. I want to highlight a chapter that really spoke to me, because it's always helpful when you have moments to pause and reflect on yourself, because that's where potentially change can be born. Like, the things that bring us to our knees, those crisis moments absolutely are like huge motivators towards making change in our lives. But so is some like good old fashioned reflection, like actually paying attention to what you're saying, feeling, how you're behaving. And this chapter 5 did just that for me. So as I continue to try to learn more in the hopes of getting myself much more comfortable and familiar with the emotion of anger, which I have habitually obliterated from my life for so long, just really believing that it is not safe for me to express anger, because then that would grossly offend people. And then they wouldn't want to include me. And one of the things I've been working for too many years to count is that it is very important for me not to feel ostracized or not included. This is such a helpful book in helping me understand something that I've been very fearful of: conflict. So this chapter talks about like different ways in which people tend to respond when it comes to like negative feedback. It's really great. So it's saying here that the 4 options for receiving negative messages tend to be: 1, blame ourselves. 2, blame others. 3, sense our own feelings and needs. And 4, sense others' feelings and needs. And I was like, is that what's going on here? So yeah, I had a great think about this, and pretty much I cannot think of any moment outside of my road rage where I don't blame myself first. That's almost like 99.99999% of the time. If I'm receiving negative feedback, I instantly, like without even question, it's like just this like automatic like program that I've got running on. And I'm like, okay, go along with it. I'm just going to keep blaming myself. So I always do that first. Then I tend to sense others' feelings and needs. I just try to understand like what the heck has happened, because obviously I identify with my own perspective. So then after I blame myself, I go into trying to more understand someone else. So that involves me wanting to sense others' feelings and needs. Then I mildly touch upon my 3rd stop, which is blaming others. I tend to be guilty of being a bit too empathetic and really understanding to the best of my ability why someone said or did something or behaved in a certain way. And then if it's like poor choices on their part, because I'm so prone to over-empathizing, I really tend to dip into like enabling, as if because I can understand it, then that can excuse the poor behavior that came along. And so it rarely results in blaming another. Really, the only other time I could think of where I do legitimately, like hardcore, unapologetically blame another is with things that don't have to do with me. So if it is a grave injustice being done to another, in particular, an animal, a child, or a marginalized group, I become like a psychotic social activist, like justice warrior, union leader. Like I become like a lawyer, like I want to throw down. So those are really the only times that I go into blaming others. And then the last stop in this whole protocol that I've got when it comes to receiving negative feedback about myself is then it takes me forever and a day to sense my own feelings and my own needs. The water is clear as mud, folks, in that department. It takes a tremendous amount of time to feel safe enough and to trust myself enough to get in the boat and go down that river and to really sink into me, to be still enough and quiet enough, and to really just catch those thoughts that lead me to my feelings and my beliefs. It takes a really long time to get there. It can be done, but it certainly isn't quick. So I thought I'd share that because it really, that's one of the chapters that jumped out the most at me. And I hope that you found it interesting as well. I wonder, how do you respond to negative feedback?
I want to talk a little bit about the use of force. So in the book, he talks about the protective use of force, because sometimes you don't want to use nonviolent communication in certain situations, particularly if it's a safety concern. You know, if a kid's wandering into the street, you're not going to start talking about their needs. You're just going to grab them and pull them onto the curb if a car is coming. And in that chapter, he talks about the punitive use of force, which is very common in our society, particularly with children, but also with adults. So I'm going to use examples of using punitive uses of force with children because it's very easy for people to understand. It's pretty widespread as well. He tells us there's four types of punitive force. The first one is physical violence. So this would be something like spanking. The second one is blaming and discrediting that person. The third one would be withholding gratification. So this could be something like grounding a child. And the fourth one is to withdraw acceptance. So this would be, you know, maybe more passive aggressive, where you withhold love or caring in order to get somebody to do what you want, or I guess to punish them, really. So what he tells us is when you want trying to get somebody to do something, you have to ask yourself two questions. What is it that I want them to do? And what are the reasons that I want them to have for doing it? And the second one's very important, particularly if you're really trying to teach somebody a lesson. You know, sometimes you think of an old-time parent saying to a kid, I'm going to teach you a lesson, and then punishing them. But when you do that, what is that parent really teaching that child? Maybe that using violence is a good way to get what you want, or if you're stronger, it's okay to hurt somebody who's smaller. You know, that just might not be the long-term lesson that you want to give that person. This really plays into my parenting philosophy. And there's another author that I really like, writes about the same thing. Alfie Cohn has written a book called Punished by Rewards, and he maintains that punishment and rewards are equally damaging because what we're doing is we're taking our motivation from being intrinsic motivation to extrinsic. We're trying to motivate people with things, either punishment or to get something else. We take away the real lesson, which is you're trying to teach people, I'm trying to teach my children anyway, to do things because of relationships and the real reasons behind it. When they do something kind for somebody, I don't want them to think, I'm doing something kind because somebody's going to give me some money. I want them to think, I'm doing something kind because it helps build a relationship with people and I want to show them respect. So obviously, I really like this book because it talks about a lot of things that I already believe in. The second thing I want to talk about is what Rosenberg calls the development of emotional liberation. So he talks about three phases of emotional liberation. So the first one is where you feel responsible for other people's feelings. You spend all this time trying to make people happy, and in that way, some of the people in your life that you care for can start feeling like a burden. The second stage is called the obnoxious stage. It is where you realize the emotional toll it takes to feel responsible for other people's feelings. And you then decide that you're not responsible for their feelings, you're only responsible for your own. And I think it's called the obnoxious stage because you're only really considering your own feelings rather than other people's. So the last stage is emotional liberation. And that's where you don't take responsibility for other people's feelings. However, you realize that two different people's needs can be fulfilled if we have empathy and we connect with them. So you can give people empathy with compassion and be supportive of the people in your life without feeling responsibility for their emotions. And this is where we can really make really good relationships. I think this does play into, you know, emotional intelligence, and that's partially what this book is all about. Having emotional intelligence, but also being able to build relationships, have true empathy for each other and for ourselves, and hopefully lead a fulfilling life because of that.
This interruption is brought to you by Unpublished. Do you want to know more about the members and Book Interrupted? Go behind the scenes? Visit our website at www.bookinterrupted.com.
Book Interrupted.
These interruptions are just going to be a bunch of my rants. Have we talked about laundry? And how is it humanly possible that there be that much laundry, like how it can be so consistently always dirty? I don't see these people wearing all these outfits all these times, but I see all these clothes in my dirty laundry pile over and over again, week after week. Jeez, it's like friggin' Groundhog Day over here.
Book Interrupted.
Let's listen in to this episode's group discussion.
Kim, you missed, I just was saying that Laird and I are maybe going to go out to Newfoundland for the summer and work.
Oh, cool. When are you supposed to start?
Yeah, we will have to leave at the end of this month. So in a couple weeks.
What are you going
to
do for work?
So Laird runs a theater festival, or he's the production manager of a theater festival almost every year in Newfoundland. So I will go and be his assistant, basically live with him. But it's like, there's a lot, like we have to get tested. We go to Newfoundland. You've got to do 2-week quarantine when you're there. It's a lot of work. So Kim, I'm not really feeling up to this right now, but I'm going to try my best to be charming.
What time are you
going to rally?
Like, are you exhausted from trying to facilitate going there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just like, it's just all a lot of stress. I love change and I hate change. Mm. I need to feel like I need time to adjust to change. So yeah. For me, when a lot of change is happening, I introvert into myself and just kind of like, I got to get through this. Close your, you know, block your ears, just focus and get through it. So for me, I'm in the focus and get through it and not the be charming and social. So mm-hmm. I'm trying to turn off, but thank you. Anyways, so okay.
Yeah. Before we turn the page and get right into nonviolent communication, Schweitz, but I really do see if you can make it through this tunnel. Oh my God, I'm like buzzing with excitement. I just see such potential and really like, I think it's going to end up being a wonderful thing.
So thank you guys. I appreciate your support. Not everyone's been so supportive. So I appreciate that you guys are all like, great, you should do it. Like, unlike some people that are like, here are all the reasons you shouldn't. You're like, come on. Like, just be supportive.
I was talking to a friend about this because she has a big life change and she's like, I haven't told really anybody, like, you know, but I haven't really told people. And I think I get that because sometimes I don't want to tell somebody because I don't want to have to manage their emotions about it as well as my own.
Exactly.
Right? Like I was saying, Dan and I kind of toyed with like not telling anybody about me, like when we were expecting until like the baby was there. Right. Because we're like, it's already stressful. And like, we're like, no, they'll be hurt because they won't understand that taking care of somebody else's emotions or like when you're doing a big move, you're like, let's just keep it to ourselves until we have all our ducks in the row and we can go, because sometimes people load on their anxieties about it. And you're like, I already got all the anxieties. You don't have to offer more.
That your book, Nonviolent Communication, falls into all that stuff too. Because I find this book kind of tries to push having to deal with your own emotions and the other person's emotions too much for me. I'm like, I don't care enough about you to know.
You don't have to manage someone else's emotions.
No, like
you can just give it to them and that's their reaction, whether it's positive or negative.
This like leads into something that I wanted to say about nonviolent communication that really spoke to me. Cause like I read this for the second time and like, I don't know. I think when you're going to discuss a book with somebody, you kind of pay different attention to it. anyway, a part of it said, you can't give empathy if you don't have empathy. And so he talks about what you can do. Like, you can try to get empathy from someone else. That doesn't always work. He talked about emergency self-empathy and he talked about screaming nonviolently or yelling nonviolently.
I forgot about that part.
And then he talked about removing yourself from the situation and giving yourself time before you address it. And the reason this really spoke to me is, particularly with lockdown, I couldn't do those things, right? So there was all this like heightened level where everybody needed more empathy. And so it was hard to get empathy from others because everybody needed more. It was hard to give it to myself because I didn't have the time and I stressed. So I needed more than I needed before. And I couldn't run away or hide because I had small kids. And I completely burnt out and at that time tried to use nonviolent communication to try to explain to people in my life like that I don't have anything to give right now. I can't give to you because I'm burnt out. And that kind of led to actually like my mom ended up coming early fall last year for 3 months because she could tell that I was just like, I'm done. I can't talk to you on the phone. I can't do Zoom calls. I'm just holding on by a thread here. And I thought it was a good point because the book talks a lot about connecting with people and giving them empathy and all this stuff, but you can't do that all the time. And that's why it's so hard to do this. So I like this book because if you really need to have an important conversation, it gives you the tools to try to do that in a connecting way and with sensitivity and compassion. And during stressful times, it's really hard. Sometimes you just want to be like, I really do need just to hide away. If you don't have that option, like you can't give anymore. And it's hard to tell people like, I don't have this time for you and I'm sorry, but I want to. It's like those conflicting needs, like the need to keep connection with the people in your life and to be there for them when they need empathy. But sometimes you have to be like, I want to give you empathy. And at the same time, I don't have any left. Like my bucket's empty.
And then if you try to fake it, it comes across as so inauthentic.
Yeah.
You know,
and like it's not real connection, right?
It's not real connection at that point. And it is. I'm sorry to hear how hard it is because it is hard, Meredith. And
right, I just can't wait till I can get a babysitter for a night and just run away.
Like, and that's the thing is that with COVID, we aren't afforded the opportunity. Many of us aren't, depending on how our lives are set up in our home base. We don't have those privacy pockets anymore to figure ourselves out or anything. And it's so rejuvenating being able to have one goddamn second to yourself, you know? It's really, really challenging.
I did like the empathy thing too, because I think also it made me think of people who, you know, if you're someone that blames yourself or identifies some elephant's feelings first, it's my Sally, right? If Sally comes out, I need to be able to be like, no. And I feel like that empathy part really was about like how I call my pain body Sally, like the person that sabotaged me, like, oh, you're so stupid. Why did you do that? And whatever. So I like that part because I really feel like that, like you sent me a message, I think, Meredith, I mean, like, you're going to love the empathy part because it's Sally, totally.
Yeah,
the shoulds. Like, I really, and it makes me also think, I don't know if my mom's going to be okay with this, but sometimes my mom, because my mom is definitely like blame myself, other people's feelings only type person too. Like I probably learned it from her. Do you remember sometimes when we were kids and she just needed a release, probably because she needed empathy for herself, she would just stand in one place and go,
I've done that.
And we would be like, oh, we broke mom. We'd be like, oh, we just stepped back. But that was her being like, I need a release.
And you know what? We gave her empathy after that.
Right. She needed for her, right? And she'd do that little scream. And sometimes I do that at home with my kids. If they're like, everybody's just demanding, then sometimes I just like, and I try to express my needs. Like, I need some space. If they don't listen, sometimes I do the, and they're like, oh.
Totally. Oh, she's serious this time.
Totally. Yeah. Like, I've locked myself in my room, so I can be alone. Not so you can bang a door and scream at me.
Yeah. This wasn't an invitation for you to up the ante of how you can get my attention.
I said, man. When the empathy thing, I thought it was interesting. The one with, there was a quote that says, when this guy, Rabbi Harold Kushner's son was dying, he heard all these words that were intended to make him feel better, but didn't. And he remembers saying all those words, those same words, and it never helping. And I remember like going through, we've talked on the podcast about my issues with fertility And I remember I was really depressed at one point. And that was my turning point of really understanding empathy, because I would used to say all those same words, being like, oh, you know, this is like explaining how to fix it, or here's a solution, or here's all this stuff. But really the only thing that I needed was someone to just say, I'm feeling emotional. We talked about saying cry. I'm just an emotional moment, but that I just wanted people to be like, I'm here. I know you don't want to talk to me. I know you don't. And I know a bunch of you did that too, of just being like, I'm here for you. And that's all. Like, I don't want you to explain. I don't want you to give me any. I want you to just be there. And I think that was really powerful for me in the empathy part, because I don't know if it's like, it must be empathy people were giving me, or just being like, just don't mm-hmm. give me sympathy. Don't give me explanations. Mm-hmm. Don't give me solutions. Don't give me any of that. And so I think now when I have friends that are going through some struggles, now I know to be like, I'm here. Yes. Period.
I'm listening. Like, yes. Connect. Yeah. Like, that's another thing he said. Like, just listen. Just listen and connect with the person when they're expressing their feelings to you. That's all you need to do. It's like so much more powerful. Like, you're right. Then here's a solution. Or one of the things they said, like, that sometimes I do too, is like, I just did it to you, is like relating, trying to relate instead of being like, no, I hear what you're saying.
I made a list of all the things, because I was like, oh yeah, I was looking at this list. I was like, how many times, when you look at your list, you're like, this is like every conversation I have with anybody. Like, not necessarily, but if you think about the conversations uh-huh. you have with people, a lot of these, it's like advising, one-upping, educating, consoling, storytelling, shutting down, sympathizing, interrogating, explaining, and correcting. When you're having a struggle, you're talking to somebody, how many of your conversations are just that, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's just interesting being like, we've been doing all this and it's very normal. It's just natural to fall into that, because it's hard to know what to say when somebody's having a challenging time as well. I mean, but yeah, it's like, I'm like, this is like every conversation I have, like most of them. And so it does take a concerted effort to do something different.
Absolutely.
But I think it's worth it.
I think it's part of our societal training.
That's why I love therapy, because it's so, though I do, I guess, care about my therapist on some level, because I trust her with some of my biggest emotions. It's so transactional for me. Like, it's so like, I get to be here and this person is paid to listen, and nobody else in my life, because we're trained to, like you said, societal training to, like, especially I can't speak for men. Most of my sharing, I think, is done with females, and like to relate. And it is comforting, but it's a tips and tricks kind of how to hack your husband bullshit. That sometimes you just need to just unload. And I love like therapy for that, even though it's like they're paid, because they're paid to do it. Like, so it's just like, if you have a good fit for yourself in therapy, it's like, they're just like, they're hearing you yeah. without judgment or without how can, like, yes. And then eventually let's work through the problem. But at least with my therapist, it's like very like, oh, just feeling heard is so important. And I really want to like work on the, God, I'm a shitty listener. Like, I'm a shitty fucking listener. Like, I'm hearing you and I'm having conversations with people and I'm trying to be supportive, but I'm just not a good listener. It's just like, when can we put the mic back on me?
It's again, I would invite you to not it's not you, Leah. It's a behavior that you've fine-tuned to prepare your response while listening to another. And most humans I'm just getting into the training of becoming a psychotherapist. And it is like, so far, guys, there's no secret sauce. It has everything to do with how can you show another individual that they are being seen, they are being heard, and they are understood. And it's utilizing and practicing the active listening skill set, which is essentially an undoing and an unconditioning of how we've been raised, because our society, and this is just my own opinions, right? I'm not going to like prove this like with research, but this is what I've started to notice.
That's what I expect from you, Kara. Start the research.
Yeah, as a wanderer. I know, I love just pulling out like theories out of my ass that are like not supported with data. But yeah, like what I've been noticing in my wanderings as a therapist in training is our society has, for whatever reason, an intolerance
tolerance to hold challenging whatevers, moments, conversations, moments. And we don't see how we're being trained from a very young age to engage in toxic positivity. Just because you can express gratitude doesn't also mean that paradoxically there's a shitstorm within you or around you. And it's like we so want to compartmentalize when really what we're simply being invited to is not like that list you were saying, Meredith. And what you were touching upon, Lindsay, is that you didn't need any advice. You didn't need anyone to give you the silver lining. You needed someone who had a willingness that could just sit with you exactly where you are and not decide on your behalf what you need. Because part of your processing was trying to figure out what you need. And it's really hard because we do have such a society that's filled with so much information. And like everything fast, for us to like slow the F down and just sink, just reflect. Yeah, I think it does just takes practice. And it doesn't mean that you, Leah, are a bad person. It just means you haven't ignited practicing a certain type of behavior. Because no one in our society says, here's your sign. You should engage more in shutting the fuck up and opening your ears more. I'm horrible at active listening, but can I try and get better? Sure, we all can.
Or like in school, you're taught to like explain what you know and you're graded on. Your performance is all based on action and speaking and writing. But there's no like, show us how well you listen. I mean, it's rare. That's what I'm saying, it's rare.
One of my friends actually trained as, I took the book to our swimming lesson, nonviolent communication, I was reading it there. And she's actually trained, she's a psychotherapist and she's also trained in nonviolent communication. It's one of her modalities or whatever. And I was talking to her about it and she's like, this book is great for psychotherapy or conflicts in your life or if someone's going through a hard time. Brilliant. But this book, this is not real life. Like some people think they could talk like this all day long. It just isn't
natural. You can't do
that all day long. She's like, it's not authentic or real. Like, so what Leo was saying, like, she's like, so let's say I came here and we were sitting at the pool and we're watching the kids. If I was like, I'm feeling a lot of joy because my need to connect with another mother is being expressed and accepted. And you would look at me like,
I'm going to move a couple
chairs. Are you a robot?
Right. She's like, it's not real. Like, you'd think android. I'm phony. And you'd be like, is she off? Or like, so relating to someone, she's like having those things, like relating to people and the things that you were talking about, like having conversations where you're informing people of things and coming up with solutions for regular conversation is natural and authentic and normal. This book, she says, is really good for conflicts or if you're having trouble in you want people to listen to you when there's a problem or you're feeling a lot of emotions or whatever, big emotions, this book is great. Or she's like, it doesn't work for emergencies either. Like, I touched on this, my personal journal. She says one of the people taking the class with us, she was like, came back and she's like, I yelled at my daughter, even though we just did the training. But she was almost falling off this cliff. I should have said, I'm very scared. And the teacher was like, no, nonviolent communication takes a long time. And you need to scream at your daughter to make her not die. So you did the right thing. And she's like, oh, okay. So there's circumstances. And they're like, And he touches it in the book too. But at the time she was like, I was at a training and someone was like, oh, I didn't say, I'm feeling very scared that you might die if you take another step forward. I screamed at her instead. She's like, that's real. That's normal.
Yes, you should save her their life. You can't talk about it if they're dead.
Like, that's what she was saying. She's like, it's an excellent tool. I find when I was doing trainings or other people read the book and come to me that it's not for, like, it's not for your everyday life.
You can't use it all the time. It's too taxing, especially since most people haven't read the book and haven't done the training. So they're just going to be like, what are you talking about? So you're going to have to like, you can tell them your needs. And like you said, they don't always hear it. Mm-hmm. Like, no, I'm telling you, I need you to move to the left. They're like, you don't control my body. And you're like, no, I just need you to move slightly to the left. Or whatever, like, you know, sometimes people don't hear what you're saying, but it's true. I think any kind of nonviolent communication is hard to do day to day. Like, I'd love to use it every time my kids have a conflict to mediate. I just don't have the energy to do it every time. So I figure if I pick and choose, eventually maybe they'll start resolving the conflicts themselves, but it can't be every day. Cause some days I'm just like, you over there and you over there. I can't deal with this fighting.
And it takes a lot of energy. Like, I read the book and I could maybe pick out, there was a couple of things that I will use or I could use, but for me to, like, I'd have to reread it again. I'd have to go to classes for me to really understand how to put this into use and use it normally in a normal conversation or whatever, dealing with conflict. If I was in conflict, I wouldn't be like, okay, let me stop and think how to do this. Like, it'd have to, you'd have to study it enough to make it a natural thing.
Mm-hmm. I think. Kim, yeah. We haven't heard much from you, Kim.
I liked what Sarah said, because while you guys were all talking, I was like, I don't know if I agree with everything that's being said here. But so I'm just like reflecting in the light of the alternate interpretation. And I think that it's a good tool for someone who maybe doesn't, it's a good communication tool to add to your tool belt. Just, I guess, like what that person that Sarah was at swimming lessons with said. And maybe for me, I feel like I have some version of that tool in my tool belt already. So to have a book about it, because it's got to be really specific. If you don't understand, if you don't know that, then you would want someone to explain it to you well. And so that's what that book is doing. But then I fear that it comes off as like that woman with her child on the cliff, that there isn't other versions of communication, or you just get like wrapped right up into this one way of doing things. I think what it boils down to is having an ability to know yourself, and also having, and I don't know if it's like emotional maturity, or I don't know what the descriptor would be of the ability to do this, but also being able to like separate yourself so that, you know, you can guard against taking things personally. I think that's a lot of times where communication goes off the rails, when you take it personally, and then we're just having a, like, you hurt my feelings more fight. And then it's kind of like the fair fighting rules. Like, I just feel like it's got its place, but, and some of it, like, I was thinking about when we were saying about empathy and just hearing and whatever, like, I don't want that. Like, if I'm coming to someone, or if I'm having a hard time, I don't want someone just to be like, I'm here. I'll be like, get fucking out of here, or talk to me so we can like I need to, and I might not take any of their advice or whatever, but I really like to like hash things out almost to the point of pushing them away, because we just keep on talking about the same thing.
I think some problems are unfixable, right?
Well,
Lindsay's problem was borderline, it was to a point where it's an unfixable problem.
But then it becomes about the solution to that problem is, how do you get okay with it? It's almost like to the serenity prayer, you know, like, what can I change and what can't I change, and give me the grace to know or whatever. That's how I feel. And it's the same, like, some things are unfixable. So it's up to you now to figure out how you're going to go on with your life, right? Or is it going to forever be a problem for you? You know,
I think that's a difference between you and I too. I'm, even though people might think I'm an extrovert because I'm a server and stuff, I'm not. Like, I like to say, I like to deal with myself inside of myself. And so I feel like, Kim, you're more of an extrovert in the fact that you get your energy and stuff from other people, and you need that. So for me, I don't want to talk everything over. I don't want. So for me, that was why that was important to me, to have people just be there, because I couldn't even talk about it. I couldn't talk about it. I couldn't do anything. I just needed to be feeling the way that I was feeling in order for me to take that time.
Sorry, I'm not making a face at you. Can you hear my neighbor yelling?
No.
Okay, good.
No. You're like, my face was like,
I'm violently considering communicating. Like, anyway, I think that that's another good point, Lindsay, because that's what I'm not worried about, but that's where I resist with this book, is because that's a perfect example. We're two reasonable people functioning. We have differences and whatever, and we need two different ways.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? That's where I'm like, well, that way, I mean, yeah. And the other thing too is like, nonviolent communication is the title, right? But like, I already communicate my needs effectively. It's, you know what I mean? It's a tool to help you communicate your needs effectively. It's a tool to help you understand someone else's needs so that you can solve conflicts. Great. But there's, you can do that without calling it nonviolent, or maybe it is called nonviolent communication, but it doesn't have to be like through this book. That's why I was quiet, because I have an unformed thought about it. So I still don't feel like I've really expressed it yet.
Maybe kind of what you're saying, like the two of you are saying too, is like, sometimes maybe it's just worth saying, hey, what do you need from me? Like, do you want to talk it out? Or do you just want me to listen? Or even just being aware that we all have the same needs, but we fulfill those needs differently sometimes.
But the book, but that's what the book is saying, is that trying to figure out the person you're just in the conversation or connection with, you're trying to figure out their needs. So if I was in a situation with Kim, I would be like, no, she wants to talk it out, so we're blue in the face and awesome. But I know with Lindsay, because she's a different person, I know her needs are for me just to sit with her and be like, I'm listening to what you have to say. You know what I mean? Like, so I think that it has to do with the individual person. And maybe the book didn't outline that as much, but what he was saying over and over is trying to anticipate the other person's needs while still communicating your needs. That's why he did that whole paraphrasing thing, being like, so you're saying that you just want me to sit here and listen to you. Or you're saying that you would like us to discuss it, maybe look up some things on the internet, maybe do a tarot card reading. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? So
that's active listening.
Right. Active listening. Right. Yeah.
Paraphrasing, reflecting, silence.
So it bugs me that he took all these things that already exist and like was like, here's my way. And I'm like, those ways are already ways. You just packaged them.
This has been around what, for a long time?
Like a long time.
And my mom took this when she was in nursing school, so, or whatever. So that, and that, like, what, in the 70s or whatever. So she thinks that maybe this was where the starting of a lot of that, like, talking about active listening and talking about came from nonviolent communication.
That makes me feel better if it's the basis of it. Yeah. Because I recognize these
this
things.
Is the
I've
third
never
edition
heard them called
here.
This.
Yeah.
So I'm like, this is already something else.
Yeah,
you know?
It's right. That's where it kind of, I think,
I'm
began.
Trying to find the
I mean, I don't know for sure.
Yeah,
don't quote me.
But yeah, he's been doing this for, well, I mean, because he's not around anymore.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Book Interrupted. If you'd like to see the video highlights from this episode, please go to our YouTube channel, Book Interrupted. You can also find our videos on www.bookinterrupted.com.
Hi, this is Leah of Book Interrupted. Did you know I illustrated a book for a self-published author? The Book Interrupted team is interested in reaching out to more self-published authors. You scratch our backs, we'll scratch yours. Go to www.bookinterrupted.com/sponsorship. Thanks. Bye.
Moments you can look forward to on next week's Book Interrupted.
I love taking things personally.
I love taking things personally.
It made me feel very uncomfortable, that part of the book.
Or a narcissist, right?
Right.
My needs.
What they're saying, nonviolent communication, but it's really just another way to control the person who's being abused.
I think if both parties are willing to dance, but if you're the one that you're like dragging the body across the dance floor.
He calls the obnoxious phase, which is like an obnoxious name for it.
It's a little rude.
Book Interrupted.
Never forget 215. Every child matters.